Okay, so good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us at our May TechConnects Marketing Peer Group session. We will turn everything over to Kevin. Obviously, we do so many things face to face. So for those of you that are new, we tend to go around the room and actually introduce ourselves. I know that we're a large group here right now, so maybe that'll be a little bit difficult. If you have any questions, then one of two things. So you could type it in the chat here, and I'll make sure that I ask Kevin, or at least address them to him, or even just jump in and be sure to ask. So that's mostly what Kevin is about, is making sure that you guys share. That's what we are about here too, because obviously peer-to-peer, that's how you learn from one another, and that's how we are able to grow our businesses. Just so everybody knows that we are recording the session, so we'll be putting it up online. Kevin also is always great about sharing his slides. So if you're trying to furiously write notes, just jot things down for your own personal, and then from there, Kevin will actually be able to send the slides around. So with no further ado, I am going to turn it over to Kevin right now.
Perfect. Thanks, Kelly. And actually, I think it probably is a good idea to go around and do the introductions at the beginning, like we usually do face to face,
Okay.
because I think right now with all this isolation and everything else going on, it's good to know there's a lot of other people here on the call and are going through similar things to you. So, Kelly, I mean, if you've got the attendee list handy, do you want to just call out people and we'll get them to
Yeah,
introduce themselves one at once?
I'll go through what I see here. So obviously Kevin will come back to you. David.
Hi, David. So for sure. I am the CEO and founder of Avidi Commerce. So we do e-commerce for an e-commerce platform.
Okay, and then I see Jason Brookelman.
Yeah, hi there. I'm an account manager at Esri Canada. I work with the provincial government here in Ontario.
Perfect. And then I see a phone number, so I'm going to call the phone number out. So I apologize. So 1-647-215-8535.
Hi, Kelly. This is Sam. Sam and Derry, Detour Collect. I'm sorry about that. My microphone is not working on the computer. I'm a founder of Detour Collect, a debt collection and recovery SaaS environment for financial institutions and collection agencies.
Perfect. Okay. And then Dave, and I apologize, Brasuti.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm an account manager also with Esri Canada. I focus on utilities and telecommunication organizations.
Okay, excellent. Mark, let's see.
Yes, good morning. I'm the third account manager from Esri Canada, focused on the municipal and public safety market.
Okay, perfect. And George Daliavi.
Hi, George Daliavin, and I'm just looking for some new opportunities to resell some technologies here in Canada, and we're exploring some things in Israel and Dubai right now.
Okay, and Ian Greensmith.
Yes, I'm another account manager from Esri Canada. I'm focusing on the education and the facilities management space across Ontario.
Okay, and Jane.
Good morning. I'm Jane Huten, Focal Point Coaching and Training. I help small businesses build and grow and survive times like these.
Okay, my list just rearranged itself. So, John Montgomery.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. John Montgomery, principal at Sales Jumpstart Services. We provide executive management and consulting services for technology companies to help them build or re-energize their sales organizations, accelerate revenue growth, and establish market leadership.
Excellent. And John Cameron. Okay, maybe something's happened. We'll come back. Sapna.
Hi, this is Sapna. I am a recruiter and an account management at Emergetel. Basically, we are into IT staffing and recruitment.
Perfect. Samantha.
Hi, yes, I did register twice as well. So my name might be up there twice just because I was having trouble connecting this morning. But I'm the director of marketing at Bluelink ERP. So we are a cloud-based ERP solution focusing on wholesale and distribution customers.
Excellent. And Carol?
From Photons, we supply energy efficient LED lines.
Okay. And then Stefano.
Hi, I'm Stefano Manilla, and I'm with Esri Canada, and I'm the commercial account manager there for the region of Ontario.
Okay, and I do have another phone number here. I don't think this is yours, Sam. So 1-647-242-3866.
Hi there, this is Alan Luke from City Division Hill. I also have some issues with my computer audio. So basically with the city, we also right now looking to help small businesses going through this tough time. And yesterday we just had our first Recover Vision Sales Task Force, where we focus on helping, for the recovery, what are we going to do?
Perfect. And Janet. Okay. I know I'm missing. Peter.
Hi guys, my name is Peter. I work with Carol at Photons. We supply energy efficient lighting. Yeah, excited for the session.
Okay, and then Stephen Wise. Okay, we'll skip, go to Vanny.
Hi, Kelly, it's Vanny Passapathy. I'm the managing partner at Building Perspective, and we work with organizations to help them optimize their processes and their performance.
Perfect, and I'm probably missing people, so have I missed anybody going around here? Okay, so Janet said she's just occupied right now, so she'll come back on. We've got congratulations, Kevin, with the new baby. So and that's from David as well here.
Thank you very much.
No problem. If I've missed anyone, please let me know. Please just jump in. Okay, all right. So with that, Kevin, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Perfect. Thanks again, Kelly. So my name is Kevin Darcy. I have a company called Think Fuel Marketing. But today I'm putting on my TechNext peer group facilitator hat, and we're going to be talking about lead generation and digital marketing in this new normal. Let's call it the kind of post-COVID normal and how things have changed, and we're going to see them continue to change. There's obviously a lot of different directions you can do or travel down to create a competitive advantage coming out of incidents like this. Obviously, today we're going to focus on the marketing side of how to do that. And really what our agenda today is going to be on is a quick look at what does the marketing and sales world look like lately in the last couple of weeks. We're going to talk about not being an ostrich and why that's important. And then we're going to give some tips on what you can do from a digital marketing perspective to increase your visibility, the conversions of people on your website, and driving more qualified leads. So as normal, even though we're virtual today, if you have questions as we go through, feel free to come off mute, jump in and ask along the way. But other than that, we'll kind of plug through. So, a lot of people ask me about, what are we seeing with other customers? What's happening around kind of North America in terms of sales and marketing numbers? And I could tell you what's happening with our customer base, but to make it more meaningful, I actually pulled information from a report that HubSpot's doing over 70,000 of their customers globally. All right. What's interesting is that the trends that we're going to talk about here in a moment actually almost identically mirror what we're seeing with our customer base as well. So at a much smaller scale, we're seeing these same things. I'll just kind of pull up the all the little notes on the data that we're about to look at. I'm not going to spend a ton of time analyzing graphs and charts and everything like that. When you get the slides, you can click over here to read the full article, read the whole insights into it. But I wanted to show you some key highlights that I thought were interesting. So let's start with sales. You know what? What's nice to see is that over the last 2 weeks here, two or three weeks, that the number of deals that salespeople are creating or recording is actually starting to rise up again. It's still not at the pre-COVID levels of deal creation, but it's finally trending back in the right direction, which is nice. The other thing to look at with this is that it's actually happening, and this trend is following across all companies of all sizes. Companies with over 200 employees are leading the pack, but you know that often has to do with you know the brand, the size of them, the budgets that they have to behind there to put to them. But regardless if it's you know small, medium, or enterprise type accounts, is where we're seeing that same trend in deals. So hopefully you guys are seeing that too, and things are rising up. And so creating deals is one thing, but closing them is another. So what we've noticed is that, you know, for obvious reasons, and I'm sure this is no shock to anybody on the phone, you know, around the end of February, beginning of March, things started to plummet, right? Deals closed is improving, but overall it's still around 20% lower than it was before all of this broke out. So we're heading in the right direction. We're encouraged to see that over the last 2 weeks it's been increasing, but you know, we still have a ways to go to get back to where we were.
Hey, Kevin, it's George. A quick question. How do you read the percentage on the y-axis? What does that mean? What does 0% mean and minus 40% mean?
Yep, good question. So the 0% is like the benchmark of the amount of deals closed across those 70,000 companies that they're analyzing as like the pre-COVID number, right? So what was the average leading into this? And then where are we dipping down? So for the average, they're using what was done pre-March 11th, I think is what they're using as their tipping point for when COVID was officially declared a pandemic. What's interesting here to see too is, and it probably no surprise, especially if somebody has a sales role, is that at the beginning of all this COVID stuff, a lot of field salespeople who spent their time in customers' offices were now being dragged back into the office or home offices. They were still being tasked with, you know, communication, things like that. So the number of emails that salespeople would send out to prospects and clients, we saw really skyrocket over the last few weeks. The interesting part is that customers weren't engaging with those emails. They weren't responding to them. They weren't super interested in getting back to one-on-one sales type conversations. It's encouraging to see over the last 2 weeks, we've seen a bit of a plateauing of it and a slight increase. So they're not in this free fall state anymore of engagement and response. But like everything else on the sales side, we still have a little ways to go to get back to our new normal. But what about the marketing side of things? Well, consumers are still reaching out. They're still researching and connecting with businesses at a higher level, right? Marketing is sending out more email communications, about 25% higher than what they were doing previously. And what's really interesting about that, because again, you could have guessed that, right? You know, we have to reach out, we've got to communicate, we're still trying to run businesses. So we're going to send out more emails to try to do this. But what's interesting is that the recipients of those emails are actually opening them at a much higher rate, about 25% higher than what they were before. So people getting these emails are taking time to read them and engage with them.
Kevin, I had a question about that. Are they more targeted email campaigns that are going out, or is it just you're talking about kind of emails in general that are going out? Do you know?
Yeah, it's a good question. They don't dive into that on this survey, so that's a good question. I would imagine, though, if you have more time and if you're doing the marketing properly, you're going to focus those emails going out on being more relevant to the audience, segmenting your list because you've got more time available to do that. But I'm sure there's still a great deal of those who are sending out that general broadcast email.
Okay.
One of the other interesting ones to look at is that, and David, I know you've always been a big proponent of this, is live chat. Live chat's continuing to rise. It had a little dip in the week of the 6th, but it has been more of an engagement tool than ever before with people post-COVID.
It's really surprising, though, that you're showing minus 5% in the middle of February. That's a month before things hit.
Yeah, and so that's kind of an interesting one, right? I mean, it could be, you know, a variety of reasons. It could be seasonality. It could be like that's a time that a lot of people were out of the office on vacation or something, right? So it's kind of hard to explain maybe where that blip, early blip, came from. But it's interesting to see that things are going at a much higher increase coming out of that. And then the last chart I just want to show you guys quickly is total website traffic. Overall, website traffic, and again, we've seen this all with our customers as well, is on the rise, right? We're getting more visitors on people's websites month over month than we had been previously. But all of these charts, all of this data, a lot of it, if you're like me, you're probably sitting there thinking, well, great, what's that mean anyhow, right? You can analyze these charts and data 100 different ways. You could ask 1,000 different questions. The four big things that we've seen come out of this information and what we've tested with customers is that buyers are actually still engaged, right? Even though they might be working remote, they might be at, you know, reduced capacity in the office, they're still engaged. They're taking the time now to do more research than they had done previously. The buy-in processes have slowed, especially in Canada, where we tend to like to make decision by committee, and you can't really get a committee together right now. So we're seeing that the sales processes and cycles getting dragged out a little bit longer. And communication is really important, right? People want to know what's happening and, you know, how things are progressing and providing ways to research those topics that they're looking at. Any questions so far on any of that?
All good.
So, three things that you can take from this, right? One is adopting a more educational approach to your content and marketing strategy. The increase in marketing email rates suggests to us that customers are still looking to engage with you, right? And while they still need to buy products, marketing teams should be adapting their content to focus more on learning and education as opposed to dialing up promotions, right? Now's not the time to say, you know, hey, if you sign up during May, we're going to give you 20% off on this product. That's not going to move somebody quicker in this point. You've got to realize that they're in the stage that they're in, and we've just got to be there to help and educate them along the way. Embracing inbound sales is a new one for a lot of companies. You know, like we talked about in the last slide, is that, you know, understanding that certain things like their budget, their willingness to enter a sales conversation at the moment or become an opportunity are completely outside of our control, right? We really don't have much influence over that at all right now. So instead, have the sales team focus on emphasizing helpful, consultative selling. You know, think of how we can provide value to them today so that they're going to be loyal to us when they are ready to start making those purchasing decisions again. The other thing that we've seen a lot of is a spike in cold calling and prospecting, which is fine. It's still a valuable tactic to use, but be more focused with it. Use the industry knowledge that you have about your customers to prioritize who you're going to reach out to. So namely, businesses that are minimally impacted by what's happening out there right now, and industries where your solution could be particularly helpful right now, right? So as an example, one industry that we've seen really, you know, for lack of a better term, skyrocket through all this is managed IT providers, right? Once everybody shifted their workforce home, everybody realized that, you know, not everybody has a laptop, not everybody has a secure and stable connection back to the office. If they're using their home computers, what kind of viruses, malware, things like that are exposed to? If they're trying to use their printer at home, you know, how are they integrating with that type of stuff? So there's areas where, you know, things are moving in a positive direction. So just try to prioritize where your outreach is. And then the last one is up your communication game, right? We've seen that emails providing to be an effective channel for customer communication, chats on the rise. And as consumers are becoming more comfortable with a digital landscape, they're going to want to engage with more of your digital tools. And what do I mean by that? You know what? If we rewind the clock 6 months and we had, you know, 25, 30 people on this call, I guarantee you at least a half dozen of us would have had technical issues. It would have been our first time using Zoom. We would have been unfamiliar with it. But you look at what's happened now, nobody had any real issues joining it. We all made it work. We all got on the call. We're becoming more and more comfortable with digital technologies, and they're going to be embraced more going forward. Any thoughts or questions on any of those? Okay. So next section I want to talk about is not being an ostrich, right? It's not the time to bury our heads in the sand and just try to hope that, you know, this all blows over and goes away. If anybody here is on my email list, you've probably know the answer to this question, but what do all these brands have in common? Feel free to jump in with any thoughts or comments. Except for them being Ryan's exclusive diet.
I knew it was coming. They don't stop spending.
That's right. They took the advantage to continue to push forward during tough times, recessions, depressions. Kellogg's is an example. In the 1920s, Post was the leader in dry cereal, right? The Great Depression came, Post decided to cut back on their advertising. Kellogg's actually doubled down on their advertising spend. That's when they introduced Rice Krispies. That's when they introduced Snap, Crackle, and Pop. And they saw their profits grow 30%, and they actually became the market leader in dry cereal during that time. Toyota. Who remembers what happened in 73, 74, and around that area?
That was the energy crisis.
Exactly, right. Yep. And, you know, your gas hog vehicles saw sales drop. It was the first time that the U.S. government issued a miles per gallon report. The Toyota Corolla was second behind the Honda Civic in that report. And Toyota actually doubled down again on their ad budget, which at first they resisted, but they pushed through and did it. And they actually surpassed Volkswagen as the top imported car maker by 1976. Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, same thing. In 1990, when we had a recession, McDonald's made a decision to drop its advertising and promotion budget. Pizza Hut, Taco Bell increased theirs. Pizza Hut saw increased sales of 61%. Taco Bell saw 40%. And that wasn't all by Ryan either. So, and McDonald's saw a decline of 28%. And then most recently, Amazon in the 2009, 2008 Great Recession. That's when they continued to innovate and push through with new products. That's when the new Kindle products came out. And in for the first time, Christmas Day 2009, Amazon customers bought more ebooks than printed books. So in the mind of consumers, Amazon became this innovative company by introducing lower cost alternatives to people who were cash strapped around that time. Okay. Now these are big fancy examples because these ones are published and researched and everything like that. But the same thing holds true on smaller scales as well. Right. So how do we take advantages? How do we take what we've learned and apply it to our own digital marketing strategies to do better? So what I want to do now is drop through a couple of tips and ideas around different areas of digital marketing, past just the common ones that we've talked about on other calls and other peer groups. So how to rank better. So let's talk about ways that we can improve our SEO other than just saying, you know, focus on your meta descriptions and your headings and things like that. One thing to take the time to look at is verify the intent of what people are searching for. So open up an incognito or a private browsing window, search for a key phrase that you think that people are searching for, that you want to optimize your site or a web page for. And the results that come up, are they showing competitors or related information to you and your products and services? If yeah, great. So you want to optimize your page for that keyword because that's telling you that the people who search for that keyword actually have the intent of finding your products and services or your knowledge. If it's not, guess what? Your clients don't call it the same thing you're calling it. You're going to have to go back to the drawing board. Perfect example of this was a customer of ours who sold industrial storage solutions. One of their product lines is that they would go and put lockers into country clubs, athletic facilities, all those types of things. And they would keep referring to them as storage lockers, right? But that's not what the search intent for the phrase storage locker is, right? If you type storage locker into Google, you're probably looking for like a self-serve storage, U-Haul storage, that type of thing. So, you know, then we have to adjust and we have to start optimizing around, you know, athletic facility lockers or athletic facility storage, right? Things like that. So just because the point of this one is just because that's what you call it, doesn't mean that's actually how your customers describe it and what they're looking for. So that's an easy way to test it. Along the same vein, we have what's called the overlap test. So what you do here is now we're going to open up two incognito windows or two private browsing windows. And does anybody know why we're doing all of this in private browsing windows?
Cookies?
Yep. Because if you just use your normal browser in the normal public mode where you're logged in, it has all your cookies and search history, your Google results are going to be skewed based off of that. If you open up a private browsing window, it strips away the majority of that information.
Okay, Kevin, I'm going to ask, I might be the only one, how do you go about opening up incognito window?
Yep. So if you use Google Chrome, they call it an incognito window. The shortcut key for it is Control Shift N, and it'll pop open a new window, and it will be, instead of the normal light gray, it will be a very dark gray, almost black. You can also click on the three little dots up in the top right corner of Google Chrome. Same concept if you're using Microsoft Edge. Microsoft calls it an in-private browsing. So you'll see an option there to open up an in-private browsing window.
Okay, I see it now. Yep.
So you're going to open up two windows, and in window one, you're going to search for the keyword or the key phrase that you want to rank for, you want to optimize a page around. And in another window, you're going to open up and you're going to search for a keyword that is related to it that maybe you're thinking, okay, I'm going to write a new article about this or a new page about this, but it's fairly close in terminology and concept to your original keyword A. And when those results come up on the two different screens, do they look fairly different? Meaning, do you see different web pages in version A than in version B? And if so, then you know that Google treats those two terms as different intents and different unique words. If you see a ton of overlap, if you see a lot of the same pages coming up, I mean, one that might be in position two on test A might be in position four on test B. But if you see a lot of overlap of the same pages, in Google's mind, those two terms are overlapping. They mean the same thing. And Google's going to serve up the same content for them. You don't need two pages for that. You need one page that's optimized for both of those terms. Does that make sense? Cool.
Sorry, Kevin, actually going back on that, because that does make sense then, because you're doing the overlap test, I guess it doesn't really matter what you're using as your search words, or are you looking for ones then that may come up in the one and two spot more than the three and four spot?
Really what you're looking for is really just that overlap, right? So okay. You're trying to just find related keywords or find out if ones are too close. So if I was doing it for our services, does Google think that people searching for how to generate more leads and lead generation services, does it treat them as the same searches, right? If it doesn't, then I'm gonna wanna create two different pages, right? If they do, I'm just gonna optimize that one page for both of those terms.
Okay. And then is that where maybe if they do, then what you're going to do is use those two different terms several times throughout your article, your blog or whatever?
Yeah. So you're going to go back to like our previous peer groups and look at like the SEO best practices.
Right.
I'll actually send out some blog articles on that as well. And then we are going to optimize that page using those best practices for both terms. Great question. Next one is the speed of your site. This one's becoming more and more important, and it's becoming more and more of an issue, actually. So as Google starts to say, yeah, we're putting more emphasis on how fast your page loads, particularly on mobile devices, and people are building more graphically intensive stylized, like lots of moving elements on their page, and these pages are becoming slower with bloat, we're really creating a big delta between the two. So to improve the speed of your site, you can take months and months to learn how to optimize images properly, optimize all the coding, set up your pages to be cached, reduced HTTP requests, pre-cache external resources, using a content delivery network, all of these kind of great things that nobody really wants to learn. Or for $50 a year, there's an amazing WordPress plugin called WP Rocket that makes it extremely simple to do all of these. There's a lot of free plugins that do this. We've done testing over the last couple months on about 12 different plugins to do this type of stuff. WP Rocket is worth the $50 a year. Any questions on that one? Okay. Bonus points for anybody who gets my stupid pun on this page. So talking a little bit about backlinks. And so we've talked about backlinks and building backlinks previously in other peer groups. And we've talked about doing guest posts. And Peter's laughing at me now. He gets it. We've talked.
I was
about
laughing when I saw Ryan.
Oh, okay.
is this what you do, Kevin, when you're up late at night because you can't because the baby's crying?
Exactly right. Yep.
I love it.
So we've talked about doing guest posts before. We've talked about building up your citations and business directories and things like that. What I want to talk about is a new method for doing this that's actually been pretty effective, and it was coined the skyscraper model by a company called Backlinko. And essentially what it is you go out and you say, okay, I want to rank for, you know, energy efficient LED lighting. And you put that search into Google and you find articles or sites that rank really, really well for that term, right? So the ones that are in position 1, 2, 3. And what you do is you go and you write a better piece of content. And what's better mean? Well, go back to our content creation peer group and our SEO peer group and follow those tools, right? Follow those guidelines. But you're going to write a really informative, really educational, really helpful piece around that phrase. And then there's tons of tools out there for doing this. You're going to go and you're going to find that competitive site. You're going to find all the other sites that have backlinks to it. So there's tools where you just say, you know, backlink checker, if you search for those. Program called SEM Rush has a really good backlink checking tool. You plug in your competitor's site and it will pull back and it'll show you every other website that has a link to that article. So then what you do is you turn around, you craft an email to the owner of any of those sites that are relevant and authoritative. And you say, hey, we've created this piece of content. We feel it's better than the one that you're linking to on this page. Would you mind updating your link to point to our page? Because it's, you know, it's going to serve your customer base better, right? Your readers, your audience ship. And so the company Backlinko, who developed this model, they reached out and they asked 160 websites to link to their post about Google's 200 ranking factors. And out of those 160, only 17 actually made the change, right, and linked to their new content. So it doesn't seem like a great ratio, a great success, but those pages all had a very high domain authority score, right? They were authoritative and they were relevant. So just by getting those 17, they saw traffic increase to that page by 110%. So it's a new, unique way of driving more backlinks and more traffic to your website. Questions on that one? So communicating better. So tips for content. I thought I'd add in some subject lines from email messages that I really liked to give you guys some ideas. Hopefully make you smile on an early Wednesday morning. And, you know, like I said, just give you some tools and tips that maybe you can think a little bit more creatively with your outgoing email messages. Because as we talked earlier, communication's huge. Marketing emails are getting read more often. So how do you stand out in that crowd? So one of my favorites is from Groupon. And they have one that says, best Groupon, the deals that make us proud, unlike our nephew Steve. I like that one because it makes me laugh, right? I'm going to open that. I'm going to read that message, right? I got Botox and this is what it looked like. I like it because one, it makes me think if I open this, I'm going to see something. There's going to be some visual there to carry it on. But more importantly, it conveys the start of a story, right? And you know, I'm sure as a lot of the people on the phone can attest to, especially in sales roles, stories sell. Right? Stories are compelling, they're engaging, they're memorable. As you wish, I'm not ashamed to admit it. Ryan's going to make fun of me, but I love the movie Princess Bride. It's awesome, right? If I see that come across, it makes me want to open that. You know, do not commit these Instagram atrocities. Okay, well, I got to figure out if I effed up somewhere along the way, right? So I'm going to open that one. On a more, you know, realistic tone, you know, when Buffer got hacked a couple of years ago, they had an email come out and said, Buffer has just been hacked. Here's what's going on. I love it because it's honest. It's to the point. It's proactive. It's a good way of handling a crisis situation, right? All kind of best practices for doing that. And then one that creates a nice sense of urgency. If you have like an e-commerce site and somebody's abandoned items in their shopping cart, is firing them off an email saying that, hey, the timer's going to go off on that cart, right? Letting them know that deal that maybe they like a coupon code they've used, that the items are going to be removed from their car and they're going to have to add it all in again, whatever it is, but create a sense of urgency around taking an action. And then following on the idea of emails and the other spot for content is talking about blogs. And there's some interest and there's some interesting data around, are blogs still effective at driving traffic? Do people read blogs? Things like that. There was a new survey done by, I forget off the top of my head, I can send out the link with this, but where about 40% of people they surveyed said they don't read blogs. But what's true is that people, and we've seen this way too often, people who are writing blogs are getting more and more in the habit of treating a blog like a sales sheet almost, right? It's pitching you on how a company or a product or a service can help you as opposed to educating them about something they're struggling with. So what are the main reasons people read blogs? One, they want to learn something new. And that doesn't mean they want to learn something new about your product. That's what your product page is for. That's what canned webinars or demos or videos are for. They want to learn something new that's going to help them progress. A good portion of people read blogs to be entertained. And entertained can mean different things depending on your industry, right? If you have an audience that has a sense of humor that you can talk to in a fun, entertaining manner, your blogs are going to be more engaging. They're going to be regular readers of those. People read blogs to understand news and trends about their job and industry. So what's changing? And then about 9% of people said they do it for all of those reasons. Okay. So if you want your blogs to drive more traffic and ultimately more leads, stop focusing on your products, your services. Stop trying to make them like micro sales sheets disguised as an article, and actually focus on these four or three items. Questions there?
Kevin, sorry, can you repeat your last part?
Pardon me?
Can you repeat what you just said? So not focus on product, focus on
these three items, right? Teaching them something new.
Oh, I see.
See. Thank you. Entertaining them and focusing on how a new trend or something new is affecting their job or their industry.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome. And then to wrap it up, we want to focus on, we've gotten people to our site. How do we convert them into leads and opportunities? So 6 conversion tips that we can offer. Put forms on your highest traffic pages. If it's up to me, I'd put them on every page on your website, right? Don't make people click from one page to the contact us page to fill out a form, right? You've got them there, you've got them interested. They see a form on that page. They feel that the form that they're filling out is relevant or is going to be submitted to the right person based on the contact or the content they're looking at. So put forms on pages to encourage conversions. Put a clear call to action on your homepage. This is an example of Taku's website. I always love what they're doing, Karen's doing over there. This is the homepage banner you see when you land on Taku's site, right? Very clear what they do, very clear about the value statements, and then they have a very clear, try Taku POS. Right? There's no ambiguity. There's no having to look around and try to figure out what the next steps are. It's just a really clear call to action on their homepage. Promote relevant offers on specific blog posts, right? So this is where you see, they might be text in line with the blog. They might be a little pop-up off to the side, something like that, that gets people, when I'm reading one of those blogs that you've written that's educating and informing them, here's your chance to sell them a little bit, right? This is where you get the little pop-up that says, download our free guide on SEO tips. Here's David's site, and I know he's always been a huge fan of this. He's been preaching live chat forever. Use live chat. If you have to use chat bots, but I would lean more towards a live chat, give people a way to engage with you on their terms. David, I'm going to ask you to chime in a little bit here because I know you have some great stories about how this has worked for you guys.
Oh, this is phenomenal. I mean, every single lead we have, it all comes in via chat right now. It's all consistent. So we have chat operators around the world in every time zone. And I mean, clearly when you hit this page right now, well, actually when you hit this page, it's asking for a full name and email. So based upon that information, we'll go and Google them and figure out who they are basically. So we know if they're large or small or so forth. But this is the only way people communicate. Nobody phones us ever, and not for the past 5 years. Not a single person. And this pops up on every single page. The challenge we have with live chat is that you need to put different messages in different languages on different sites globally, and you can't do it. So, you know, unless you want to get 10 different live chat accounts, but that's a problem. So we're actually making our own chat application to solve it. But still, this is far and away the better way to go. And so forth. And the other advantage of a tool like this, it'll tell you exactly what city and country the person's in. It's much more detailed than HubSpot. This thing actually gives a nice map, basically. So we use this with HubSpot together. We don't find HubSpot's chat very good yet, and so forth. But yeah, no, this is phenomenal, and that's how we get every single lead, and so forth. So I'd strongly recommend chat. But you have to have a trained operator that is not going to just say, give me your name and email and somebody will contact you. Because typically the people hitting our site are CEOs and so forth, or directors, and they're in a rush. They want the information now. What do you have? What can you do? How long will it take? What will it cost? And if you can present that kind of information very, very quickly, you can close a deal very, very quickly.
Yeah. Another tip is personalizing page content, and you can do this in a way that's not creepy. I wouldn't suggest, you know, using somebody's name or company name or something like that, but there's a lot of different tools and a lot of, you know, whether you have a WordPress site, HubSpot site, whatever, where you can add some personalization based on what you know about the person. So for example, you know, this is the banner area on our home site. We could set it up so that if it was your first visit to our site, this is what you see. When you come back to our site the second time, you can see this instead. Hey, we knew you'd be back, right? It makes it stand out. It seems different. It personalizes the experience to the people on the site. And the last conversion tip here is nurture your leads. And there's no cute picture here because I want you to focus on this over everything else, is that no lead is magically going to turn into a customer. Leads are only as good as your nurturing efforts. So if somebody downloads your free ebook or a free white paper, or if they engage with your chat operator to ask a one-time question of, you know, can you do A, B, and C? And then they sign off. You're going to have to continue to nurture those people, right? And that's a series of emails that are hopefully focused on what they're trying to accomplish or what we know about them, educating them, nurturing them. It could be phone calls to them as well. Kevin, one-to-one emails. Yep.
Have you found there's any specific way, like a best practice for nurturing your lead during COVID?
The basics behind it, I wouldn't trait any different. The basics behind it being, you know, we're here to educate, help, and guide you down that path, right? So the emails that go out or the nurturing emails that go out is, hey, you know what? Here's a blog article that we thought would be helpful to you based on these reasons, right? What I would definitely not do anymore, you know, this maybe had its place for the first couple of weeks of lockdown. Stay away from, I hope this email finds you and your family well in these, you know, this time of crisis. It's past the point of being sincere. What we're seeing is that people are really demanding a sense of returning to normalcy, right? And being constantly reminded of, you know, oh yeah, by the way, the whole world's on fire around you. You know, that's not a great feeling. So
do you allude to it at all in your emails?
Only if it's relevant to the message.
Okay, so right. You would just write it how you normally would.
Yeah.
Before COVID. Okay.
Yep. like if I go back to my example of like managed IT providers, right?
Right.
They're going to have messaging in their nurture campaign that talks about, you know, you have people working remotely right now, but are they working securely? Mm-hmm. Right. That's relevant. That ties into to COVID and what their actual message is. You know, if I sold shoes, I'm not going to, you know, write a message about how our running shoes could keep you, you know, 6 feet away from everybody else or something, right? Because it's just, it's not relevant. It's not truthful.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, no worries. And then the last note on that nurturing is that typically early stage leads who are in that research phase need 8 to 10 touch points or nurture points before they're going to engage with your sales team. So nurturing doesn't mean, okay, well, I sent them 2 emails as a follow-up and I never heard anything, so I guess they're not really a good lead. It's a sustained process of continuing to message them and work with them in nurturing that relationship. So in closing, the new normal is taking us to a lot more of a digital landscape, right? And digital marketing is going to be a big part of that. As people start to realize this, the digital marketing space, your SEO, everything like that is going to become a lot more competitive. So you want to take some time to focus on your digital presence, your digital footprint, and then always make sure you're following best practices. There's a lot of black hat tactics for SEO and link building and things like that that might get you a quick win in the month, but then as soon as Google catches on to them, you're going to be hurting for a long time after that. So that being said, I've got about 2 minutes left. If there's any questions, or Kelly or Ryan, if you have anything to add.
Anybody have any questions or comments or anything that, any experiences right now that you have going on that you'd like to share?
I wouldn't, it's David here. I wouldn't mind sharing something interesting that I we just realized that during the session I was communicating with my India team and so forth. We figured out one of the ways we're getting some large customers is due to the fact that Gartner mentions us. And because we noticed that. So one of my team actually in the last hour decided to Google to see if we're in any Gartner report anywhere. And he found a link for us on a competitor website in Australia. And what's interesting is when I hit that link, it redirects me to the homepage. So the competitor is intentionally saying, okay, if somebody comes from my other competitor to this link that mentions me and the competitor, make sure they can't read it and so forth. Very, very fascinating. And so forth. Of course, they don't realize we can click on it from other places in the world. So anyway, that was just an interesting experience that we noticed this morning, which was fascinating.
Interesting.
Are there any things that seem to be working for anybody right now? Not working? Okay.
People I guess have free time for phone calls. That's the one thing I've noticed.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I think more people are answering the phone, and some of the people that I've spoken to are actually quite appreciative that you've taken the time to call them. So, and it's a valid point. I think you're kind of going back to phone calls more than emails. I know personally, I'm getting so many emails right now. It's hard to keep up with them. I don't think I've ever had so many.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that goes back to, you know, this slide here, that nurturing process that you put people through, it, you know, as long as they're good opportunities, they should definitely include phone calls in there as well.
One thing I've noticed is the number of companies, especially business coaches, that try to connect you on LinkedIn, it's incredible. It's every 2 days, some business coach or some consultants connecting. And I've gotten to the point where if your title says salesperson or coach or whatever, I'm not going to connect with you, because they assume that if you connect, oh my gosh, it's a customer, we got to have a meeting. And no, I don't want to talk to you, and so forth. But
yeah, I get the same thing with web developers. Every day I probably get about 3 requests from web developers. Right. And if you accept it, within seconds you get a message saying, hey, and then they just throw up their sales pitch all over you. And it's pretty bad.
Oh, I had one company send me a message, and we're actually partners of that company, but I guess a different division didn't know. So I accepted the connection. And then within seconds, I get a phone call on the business line that routed to my cell phone. And it's like, why are you calling me? You know, I mean, only people that ever call us are salespeople. I want to talk to you and so forth. Anyway.
Yes. Hi, Kevin. I just have a quick question about the outbound. I know today we are talking about inbound. I have a question about outbound. So you talk about 8 to 10 touch points. So normally we do that through our CRM system. So like email sequence and phone calls. And sometimes we do like a marketing campaign from MailChimp. So is there any other app between the CRM system? CRM system is more personalized. And MailChimp is too genetic. Is there any other app between?
Not really. So the question is about, like, you know, if you're writing one-to-one emails from like your sales team out to people, versus using like a MailChimp and you're doing a mass mailing, is there kind of a way that we can take the efficiency of mass mailing and merge it with personalization of one-to-one emails? There are some tools out there, like the new version of HubSpot Sales Pro will let you do what they call their sequences, but on bulk. So right now, if you have the basic version, you can do a sequence, which is like a series of emails that go out, but you have to do it one person at a time. The new pro model is I could say, okay, send it to these 150 people all at once, right? It goes still goes out individually. It's still a one-to-one email campaign, but it's done in a little bit more of a bulk area. But, you know, that goes back to, let me just pull up the slides here. Not that one. This, and it's what's working versus what's not working right now based on the data is, you know, content that's educational, looking to nurture that relationship and not to be too salesy in the approach, right? That's what the bulk of these emails that are getting sent out here in this chart are about, is sales type emails. And the engagement, the responses from those are really low. Where on the flip side, with the marketing ones, you know, they're both seeing positive growth.
Thank you. Kevin, do you mind just going back and putting up your summary slide again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just been asked about that. And we will be sending out the slides after. Kevin will send them back or send them to myself and I will send them out to you as well. Okay, well, I guess it's just past 9:30. So we will wrap ourselves up here. I just wanted to give a couple of things. Next week is our sales peer group on 6 essential rules of sales negotiation. And I know we're going to be moved into groups. Gord Smith will be running that one. Tuesday is on continuing to drive culture and engagement virtually. So what are your teams doing? What's working for you? What is not working for you? And then the following week on May 20th, we have somebody talking about cost reduction strategies. So business survival versus status quo. And we're going to have our product management peer group on the 21st, moving at startup speed in a regulated environment. Then we've got a workshop on resilient well-being, so living with uncertainty. And we actually hope you'll take a break. Jane and Kevin can attest to our trivia. We've got a movie madness on the 27th of May. So it's just online trivia questions. Both Jane and Kevin won Tim Hortons gift cards. And then on the 28th is a great peer group, whether you're a CIO or not, but it's the non-tech imperatives of technology success. Graham Binks is going to be talking about a book that he's written, and it's really whether you're technology related or not. It's probably more if you're not understanding technology, Ryan may be able to chime in on that one.
So, yeah,
go ahead and register. We'll be sending things out. So for those of you that are new to TechConnects, through the month of May, we're still running our peer groups complimentary. From then, we'll be, as we are a membership-driven organization, we'll be going to a different model. But everybody have a fantastic day. We hope everybody has a great day, enjoys the weather, enjoy the snowstorm that's supposed to be coming this weekend, I guess. So stay warm. And if anybody has any questions, please let us know if there are any topics that for sure that you're interested in. I know Kevin's just thinking of the June topic for the marketing peer group. So if there was a hot topic that you would really like to discuss or you want some more information on, let myself or Kevin know and we'll do our best to try to get it covered for you. So everybody have a fantastic day and we'll see you online soon.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody. Bye. Thanks, Kevin.